Chapter 9. Hangman. The crime scene had been cleared long before Will arrived in Bucharest, leaving the profiler with numerous photos and documents, and not a whole lot to work from the scene of the crime. It was like any other building now. A 6-unit apartment with rooms to rent, and not a whole lot of people looking to fill them after the recent murders. Judging by the number of windows lacking curtains, Will was willing to bet most, if not all, of the units were now available, after the discovery of the body hung over the edge. Lots of pictures, Will noted, looking from the assortment of glossy photos in the folder to the first building a victim had been discovered dangling from. The man in question, A. D. Popescu, had been found upside down with a hole in his head. A local woman had called it in when she had noticed the body during an early morning jog. Will was just happy it was a local woman and not an early rising child. The ordeal had originally been documented as a suicide, though the gun had fallen from the man's hand during his descent over the building's edge. His prints had easily been taken from the handle of the well-cared-for weapon, his and his alone. The bullet wound had only added to the suspicion of self-destruction. It was a traditional suicide shot, a star burned from the muzzle against Popescu's temple in a classic sign of the close proximity of the barrel to skin. Will could see the lingering stain of rust in the mortar where the body had laid down to leak fluids down the building's face, the shadow of death clinging to the bricks like a shawl. "How did you know this was part of the murders and not just a bad suicide?" Will asked, looking from the photos to his still solemn partner. Alex hadn't spoken much since running into Nigel, the cheery man meant to watch Will's back suddenly keeping his thoughts to himself. Will didn't like that. Not with the man acting as his translator and standing guard. Will was used to being disliked, but he was used to being disliked while being armed and able to protect himself in an English-speaking country. "Alex?" he prompted, hoping to jolt the officer.
"Are you working with him?"
was the question that Will hadn't expected. The distance look in Alexander's dark eyes had helped since running into Nigel at last clearing, to focus on Will, their depths accusing with betrayal. "I only arrived yesterday. How could I possibly be working with Nigel?" He closed the folder, turning his full attention to his partner. But his answer was neither the yes or no that Alex was looking for, and he waited, stone-faced, for the clarification he desired. "No," Will said, exasperation sneaking into his words as he was made to justify himself. "I'm friends with his brother. Our meeting last night was a complete coincidence." Will was running on fumes, still tired on too little sleep, and not nearly enough caffeine to be taking on the hangover pounding behind his eyes. He really didn't need this right now. But life didn't care, and kept adding to the pile. Will could see it in his eyes. Alex wanted to believe him, needed a friend he could trust with a sickening desperation. Maybe more so than Will. But his trust for the profiler had been thrown to the wind when they'd run into Nigel. "What does he have on you?" Because that was the real problem. Nigel had something on Alex that was keeping the officer under his thumb. Blackmail on the cop who obviously wanted nothing to do with the twin that was keeping him on a very short, very tight leash.
"I told you not to ask,"
Alex reminded, finally finding his voice and his courage. He didn't meet Will's eyes again, instead turning his attention back to the murder at hand.
"We thought it too brutal to be a suicide."
He changed the subject.
"Especially once the others started showing up, it seemed to fit. Suicide tends to be more subtle. They usually don't display themselves like this. Jumping off of a bridge, bleeding out in a bathtub, hanging themselves in a closet, you get the picture. Hanging themselves off the side of the building, upside down, with a shot through the head."
He shrugged.
"No. No, this was intentional. This was done to scare somebody."
"I have to agree. Suicide is more intimate. This was done to mock the man who died, make an example of him, and show off the killer's ability to control." Will was sincerely regretting the scotch, his head pounding as he tried to think. "Whoever's responsible for this, they don't need cooperation. Whoever this message is for, they're telling them that they don't need to take it, whatever it is, from them. They'll give it to them." He opened the folder again, now that at least part of his partner's attention had returned to the case. Partial or full, he'd take what he could get. It was only fair. It was all Will was offering up himself. his own thoughts split between a dead man, his raging headache, and the mistake he'd slept with last night. Nigel wasn't a good man. Will had known that before stepping foot out of the bar. But that was about all he knew about Nigel. He hadn't wanted to know more at the time. Nothing more than he had to, because he'd been afraid of creating bad water between him and Hannibal. Now he was wishing he knew a whole lot more. The man enjoyed violence, was accustomed to it enough to deal it out and walk away with a smile. He worked in a business that used blood and pain to his advantage, and the business paid well, if his house offered any sort of insight towards the profile Will was building. It paid very well. And then there was his sway at Ouroboros. It wasn't much, but it was the start he needed toward divulging the Batman and what he held over Alex. Will's next dilemma was deciding how much he really wanted to know about Nigel Lecter. How much was he willing to risk losing the friendship he'd built with Hannibal over the actions of his twin? Hannibal was a friend that he didn't want to lose. His reason for closing his eyes and sticking his head in the sand in the first place. It was the choice of ignorance that had gotten him where he was now. Stuck with an untrusting partner, no weapon. A case both men were too distracted from to give their full attention to. And the growing possibility of a lost friendship. It was a thought that turned his stomach. A nightmare in itself he wouldn't want to wake from. He didn't know what he would do if he lost Hannibal. The man was his rock. A beacon of light on the shore for Will to swim towards when the sea of his mind became too rough, and the boat he was lost in capsized. Without him, Will would have fallen apart months ago.
Annie is just as possessive and owning as I am. He's just better at hiding it.
Nigel hadn't been lying when he'd said it. He'd been being brutally honest with Will, in a way that had him second-guessing his friend and therapist, as he recalled the words from that morning. It was something else he'd have to think about, maybe. Will still wasn't willing to yield on Hannibal's innocence, but the way that Nigel had looked at him, the way he'd said it, as though it was as real as the air he breathed, it had stuck with Will, pulling at his mind like the string of a splinter. It wouldn't go away until he'd plucked it out of his skin. He brought himself back to the case. "I need to get on the roof," he announced, looking overhead at the building's edge and the cloud-crawling sky. It looked as though it was going to rain, the beginning of a chill creeping on the wind that gets their skin into goosebumps. He wished he'd thought to borrow a jacket.
"I'll speak with the residents, whoever's left."
It was a 3-story building, an apartment with a rooftop fire escape. Will left Alex to speak with the residents while he walked around to the back where the ladder to the roof resided. With the investigation for this particular area completed, he didn't worry about fingerprints as he grabbed the ladder and climbed to the top. Lifting himself over the ledge to walk to the building edge and see over. It was a long drop. Not the tallest building in the area, but high enough to look over the top of most of the other houses, to a few of the taller ones scattered a couple of streets over, and a towering cathedral a couple of blocks down. "Was someone watching this?" he asked the late morning sky. Did they care if they did or didn't? Was this a case of who he was, not where he was? Or was one just as important as the other? Or not at all? He skimmed over the translated document one more time, his eyes focusing more on the pictures detailing the murder than anything the documented pages behind them had to offer. One could only glean so much from the information gathered by another. Closing his eyes, he took a breath and let the pendulum swing. "I bring Mr. Popescu up onto the rooftop. His hands and feet are not bound. They do not have to be." He's climbing the ladder behind his victim, the men climbing up ahead of him, one sluggish step at a time. "I have control over his every movement without ever having to lay a finger on him, the puppeteer to his marionette." They climb over the edge, his victim first and he after, and he stands to the man's side, an observer to the destruction he is about to do unto himself. "I had made him carry a rope, tow to the own means of his end. Now that we stand on the roof, I instruct Mr. Popescu to tie one end of the rope to the steel bar of the ladder, to walk to the building's edge and tie the other around his ankles. He watches the man, not much older than himself, tie the thick rope first around the ladder's pole, and then around himself, standing precariously on the building's edge. He complies without question or fight. There had been no signs of struggle. The only marks upon him, outside of the aged scars, were from the rope, the gun, and the fine white powder of cocaine on his nose. I then ask Mr. Popescu to take the gun from his holster and hold it to his head. I have not taken his weapon from him because I hold no fear of him using it against me. My control over Mr. Popescu is so complete the man wouldn't dare. He complies, and Will watches, mesmerized, his blood pumping through his veins, adrenaline moving through him like a live wire of fire. The absolute power, undeniable control he holds over this man and his life, all held within the very whisper of words from his tongue. It always felt so good when he slipped into their skin and made the world bleed. It was why he feared it so deeply. Standing on the building edge, feet bound and a gun pressed by his own hand to his temple, I watch as Mr. Popescu stands still, awaiting my final order. He watches the man shift. In the flash of a blink, Popescu has turned to Hobbs, the dead man grinning at him as he murmured words that should have been forgotten. "I tell him to fire," Will spits at the haunting, and he feels another wave of power as the dead man pulled the trigger. Blowing a hole through the side of his head, Mr. Popescu falls from the building's side, without my ever having to lay a finger on him, informing everyone he knows that I do not need an army to take them down. I can make them do it to themselves. This is my design.
"Will?"
Startled back to the present by the call of his partner from below, Will swallowed back air to ease as much of the color from his mind as he could, looking down over the building's front to Alexandru, the officer offering him a look for having disappeared without a word.
"Sorry."
Will tried to stop the shaking in his voice. The color was gone, but the adrenaline had stayed, his heart pounding and blood still on fire with the murder he hadn't committed.
"I have what I need. Can we move to the next location?"
he called back. He really needed to think about risking his life in a rental car and downloading a Romanian language app.
"What did you find?"
Alex asked once the hired profiler was back on solid ground and walking with him back to the car. "Nothing solid." Will slid into the passenger seat and felt his stomach lurch as Alex peeled out onto the road. He had been hoping that it had only been Nigel who drove as though he had a death wish. Apparently that wasn't the case. Alex drove just as recklessly as the monster he'd bunked with. "The report I read theorized an area dispute between gangs as a cause for the murders. I think I agree, but I still want to see the other sides." The drive was quiet after that, the usually cheery officer keeping to himself as they drove to their next destination. It turned out to be a telephone pole, the body of a woman found strung up like a crucified sacrifice, another hole punched through her skull. This one was murder, unquestionable. There was no way for the victim to have fastened herself to the pole as she had. Not with her hands missing, the appendages severed at the wrist. These are warnings. His hunch was unmistaken as Will looked between the photos on the pole. The first was a show of submission that he could force. The second is a promise to follow through his threats. Though whatever had worked on the first victim obviously hadn't worked on the second. Will couldn't get up on the pole. Knew that without asking. He leaned against it instead, standing beneath where the victim had hung, back pressed to the wood. Unfortunately for Will, it only allowed him to stare across the street to a couple of houses. It wasn't the view he was looking for. He'd need to get up higher for that. The area was all residential, no stores anywhere on the block, which meant no video surveillance, and unlike the last area, the street was covered in houses, not towering apartments. Which posed the question, how did they get the body onto the pole without being seen? "This is definitely a gang war, and your culprit has people working in the electrical company," Will announced.
There would have been a call made for the wires down, or an emergency. He flipped through the folder, examining the pictures of the second scene. Despite the numerous shots of the body and the wounds it had obtained, there was no photo depicting the view the corpse would have enjoyed in death. Something that would need a couple of guys and a truck, one with a bucket ladder. The body would have been collected from another location and loaded into the bucket for display at this precise location. Location was a factor, or they wouldn't have been picking places that would leave them easy to be caught. He wondered if they'd bothered to clean out the buckets with bleach. Then again, after nearly 2 months, there wouldn't be any evidence left to find. Two more buildings and another strung up from a streetlight, right? Will looked up the pole, straining to see if any dark stains could still be seen on the innocent wood. There were none that he could make out, not like there'd been on the mortar. The little color that had seeped from broken flesh onto wood long since washed away. He tried to picture the woman, dead and silent with unseeing eyes staring out into the night. Arms bound at the shoulder, elbow and wrist with crossbeam, ankles to the pole. But no hands. An angled shot through the back of her head, and no hands. She fought back. Whatever had transpired between her and the killers, the reason she had been brutalized, was a punishment against her. She had fought back, and this was their answer. Take the evidence, display the body, make it ruthless. They shot her to stop her. Where Mr. Popescu had taken his own life, hers had been taken from her. Whatever had worked on Popescu, it hadn't worked on Mrs. Albu. She fought back. They'd been forced to take her down, and Will was willing to bet that she'd gotten her hands on one doing it. Scraped skin under her fingernails that they weren't willing to leave behind. So they took her hands. No risk of DNA traces left to be found. Alex, do the police have any idea what gangs are working, what sections of the city? He needed a visual. All Will knew about Bucharest was that the city was divided into 6 sectors, and they made it look like a pie, the way that it was all split from the middle.
Only a little, Alex admitted. The men we capture are fiercely loyal. I can get you the reports, but they're all in Romanian. It'll take me a bit to have the file translated.
The language barrier was becoming more and more problematic by the day. Despite his tendencies towards isolation, Will had never felt more alone than he did in the Romanian city. He couldn't even pick up a copy of the local paper. It was a level of isolation that he'd never experienced before. I need you to go over any files you have regarding these gangs, and look for anything that might connect to this case.
It wasn't a small request. You are asking for a late night,
Alex accused, still looking stressed. The idea of their day getting longer left him looking even more drained. I'll buy you dinner. It was a promise that earned him a half-hearted laugh. Will didn't buy him dinner. Instead, having Alex buy him another meal as he recalled the loss of his wallet while standing at the checkout. The article lost with his jacket the day before. It was a stupid mistake, but there was too much happening all at once, and his spine was stretched in too many places as he tried to cope with alcohol, poor decisions, and lingering jet lag. Will also still needed to return Hannibal's phone call. At least one thing that he was looking forward to. It would give him the chance to ask the man if he could mail him a few things that Will hadn't been expecting to need, and suddenly did. Things like another jacket, and the visa he kept in his sock drawer for emergencies, because there was no way he was going to be getting a new debit card anytime soon to be making currency exchanges, not while lost in Bucharest. Will cursed himself for having let Jack ship him off before he could be better prepared for the trip, and then cursed Jack for having ever offered him up in the first place. In these last 2 days, Will had never been more unprofessional in his life. It was killing the little piece of him that actually took pride in his work. It had to have been in my jacket, he explained, as they dropped down in one of the many side rooms in the precinct, and began poring over files and notes. Will, over his own folders and a map he'd had Alex pick up from the local gas station, and Alex over dozens of folders pulled from drawers. It was with the realization of his continuously shitty luck that Alex had finally started to relax around him again. No threat to be had from the profiler who couldn't seem to walk 3 steps without Lady Luck pulling the rug out from under him.
Your luck is worse than mine.
He grinned at Will, looking up from one document or another to take a bite of burger and wipe his fingers on a napkin. It's not usually this bad, Will muttered, marking out the vaunted locations of each body to have turned up. Just a bad start. It would have been better if I'd been able to remember the address for my apartment. He could have skipped most of the day's drama if he'd known his way home. It still wouldn't have helped him with his wallet, but in comparison, that was the least of his worries. Will had already cancelled his debit card and the credit card that he'd taken for any unexpected travel expenses. The only real loss was 100 Romanian lus, roughly $30, and his driver's license. There might have been a couple of receipts jammed into the pocket and a coupon for half-priced chicken and tacos, but nothing that he couldn't replace when he got home. He hadn't lost his passport, and that he would count as a blessing.
What connection do you have with Nigel?
Alex changed the subject fast enough to give Will whiplash, the profiler looking up at the interrogating officer with disbelief at the subject's return.
I need to know, Will.
Alex buried his face in his hands, stressed and overwhelmed by the happenings of the day.
I won't be able to do my job until I do.
Will wondered which job he was referring to. The one of an officer to protect and defend, or whatever it was he had going on with Nigel. I'm no one you have to worry about in regards to Nigel.
Are you?
He gave Will a look that left him feeling as though he were back in high school. An awkward friend asking if he'd made it to second base without speaking the forbidden word. Does it matter? He answered instead, because that could offer enough truth for Alex to pick out what he needed, and enough denial for Will not to feel like he was back in high school. Alex sat quiet for a moment longer, considering Will and his non-answer before nodding. He'd taken what he'd wanted from it, decided that whether he was fucking him or not, they were involved, and that was good enough for the officer.
I have to run an errand for my wife.
He lied, and Will could see it. Watched the uneasy movements that gave it all away, and wondered how the man had managed to go so long as he had without getting caught in whatever illicit activity the bad man had recruited him into doing.
I'll be back shortly. Do you think you can handle looking over the reports on your own for a while?
Will looked from his handful of English reading sheets to the piles of Romanian, and turned back to his partner with a strained smile. We can continue this tomorrow. Alex couldn't have looked more relieved.
Thank you. I would offer you a ride, but I'm afraid I'm already running late.
Will waved him off, and the officer was gone, suit jacket in hand, as he abandoned Will with a small pile of files, folders, documents, and a map. At least he'd be able to find his way home this time, with the map in hand and his address scrawled on a note, his phone along with Nigel's and his twin's phone number. Nigel was becoming a whole new problem, one Will needed an answer to and couldn't ignore. At least there aren't any actual bodies, he reminded himself. The photos, though unpleasant, weren't the same as looking at a corpse. An image was always easier to look at, though their implication was never any easier to digest. Someone had still died, and Will still needed to bring the monster to justice who had taken that life from them. Will planted another 3 circles on the page before him, and followed the pattern of a curve with his marker. It wasn't the wide semicircle he'd been hoping to achieve, but it could have been the beginning of one. He didn't think the direction of each body facing towards the same center point on the edge of Sector 3 was a coincidence. They were being laid out to surround a perimeter. A very small one, he suspected to have once been very big. A battle for territory and a few visual warnings, Will mumbled to himself, using his own numbers to break the silence as he sat back to look at the map. They won't stay in their area, so he's marking the border of it for them. Remind them of where they belong. It wasn't perfect. Still didn't tell him half of what he'd needed to know to find the one behind it, but it offered a starting point that he hadn't had before. There was a chance the police might be able to determine the next point for planting a body and, with any luck, intercept their killer before they could make a getaway. Maybe even get a name from whoever had been dispatched from the electrical company. The biggest problem with his plan would remain to be the unpredicted time of each death. Neither gang wore any distinct symbols that he was aware of, a tactic to keep their men safe from the watchful eyes of the police and, ultimately, each other. With how sporadic the times of death had been, jumping between days and weeks, either the murders were happening on a whim, or whenever the opposing group pissed off the one doing the killings. Starting point, Will told himself. Who called for electrical work on the night of the first murder? Who was dispatched, and where might they strike next? Another call, and another file he was going to need Alex to look into when he got back. Feeling useless and wishing that he knew more than just English and some half-forgotten Cajun French, Will packed up the files and folders for the night to take home and pore over there with a dictionary and a translator app. Or at the very least, take home and keep together. He didn't think he'd be getting much reading done. The task more likely to just make his eyes bleed than offer anything useful. Shoving his chair back onto the table, perhaps a little harder than necessary, Will gathered up the files and started out into the streets of Bucharest to find his way to a hypermarket and then home. He still desperately needed a kettle. Chapter 12. Mine. Will woke 6 hours later to the irritating chime of his alarm singing from his phone. That meant it was 7. Sun climbing to the sky to greet early morning joggers and drag groggy profilers from the bare mattress of their bed.
I need to buy some sheets.
He groaned, stretching until he felt something in his shoulder give a gratifying pop, and a sharp ache in the other. He needed a shower. The sharp scent of stale sweat clung to his skin. His shirt was soaked with it, and he didn't want to think about the permanent marks that would start forming on the mattress if he didn't bother to get some proper bedding soon. Groaning, he grabbed his phone and killed the alarm. There were no messages waiting for him when he rolled out of bed this morning. Only the soft glow of dawn creeping through the curtains of his window, and the play of shadows across his floor. He wished there were shadows playing over furry mounds of sleeping dogs, and that the light crawling over his feet was the press of cold noses. He missed his dogs. Will still hadn't had a chance to Skype or record any teaching sessions yet, and the thought of sitting down in front of his laptop long enough to talk to a black screen mirroring his face was more daunting than the idea of an early start on the case. He was still tired, the days passing too fast and dragging on all at the same time, leaving him feeling drained. He wasn't sleeping right, still. Not that he slept all that well at home to begin with. But the unfamiliar surroundings and the sense of insecurity had left him more than a little restless. The sooner I finish this, the sooner I get to go home, he reminded himself, turning his mind toward thoughts of killers and victims and questionable partners. He briefly wondered if Alex would be feeling any better that morning, as he found his way to the bathroom, and if there was any point in reporting to the office, or if he should just grab a coffee and hit the streets. If he skipped the office, it would give him a few extra minutes to get ready, and maybe eat something substantial before heading out. It wasn't like he had a whole lot to be reporting on just yet anyway. There was only so much a man could do on his own in a foreign city. Stripping the borrowed clothes to pull on the floor, he stepped into the shower, turning the knob to be blasted with a moment of cold that shocked him more than a little awake and made him curse, before the water turned to warmth hot enough to rival the fires of Mordor. It fell upon his skin, and then stopped. Will pushed the hook in the spout down for the water to drain back through the faucet before pulling it for the shower, trying to force the redirection of water. It didn't work. A trickle sprinkled down from the shower head to splash against the bottom of the tub and warm his toes with lukewarm water. Letting the hook fall, he watched the trickle change to the bath faucet and pool around his feet.
God hates me,
he decided, stepping out of the tub to find his coffee cup in the sink where he'd left it. Grabbing the porcelain, he walked back to the bathroom, rinsing it with a little water pouring from the tap, and filled it with enough frigid water to dump over his head. The pressure and the hot water was completely gone. He sat on the side of his tub, dripping onto the floor as he combed his fingers through damp curls, and cursed again before grabbing his phone.
They needed to talk anyway.
Hey, Nigel, can I use your shower? Nigel was waiting for him by the door when Moscamp pulled up to the condo. The bad man opening the driver's side to drop a number of bills that Will didn't catch the value of into the driver's lap. He said something in Romanian to the man before walking around to pull Will away from the cab and into the building. Will really needed to pick up a book on fucking Romanian. I'm able to pay for my own taxi, he pointed out as he was led upstairs. I have money.
You have limited funds,
Nigel countered almost knowingly.
Shipped off to Bucharest at the drop of a hat. I doubt they give you a wad of cash to take with you.
The smile Nigel gave him made something warm twist in Will's stomach. I'm being reimbursed, he admitted. It was a good way of controlling spending while away. Money would be limited to his usual income, and he wouldn't spend any more than he needed. Not that he would have taken advantage of any cash provided. I'm being borrowed. I'm not employed here.
Well, I don't mind paying for a cab if it means getting to see you in the morning,
Nigel said with a voice like honey and molasses, closing the door to lock behind them as they entered the confines of his home.
Well worth the money. But if you're feeling guilty about it, you could always save me the trouble by staying here.
Will adjusted the bag in his hand as he felt the slide of a broader one along his hip, a plume of smoke skirting over his skin as thin lips pressed to the nape of his neck in a kiss. Will turned in the Batman's hold to face him, and watched Nigel as he blew the last puff of smoke from his cigarette and snubbed the cherry in the ashtray on the island. I don't think staying here would be such a good idea, but you could relieve my guilt by letting me pay for my own cab. You're not made of money either. How much was it?
Anything that keeps you in close proximity is a good idea,
he purred.
It doesn't matter.
Nigel's hands were on him again, sliding around the curve of his waist.
So, did you only come by to use the shower?
I was hoping we could talk. Will didn't lean into him, but he didn't pull away either. He should have, but a piece of him was enjoying the attention, and the pleasant memory of their night together. I need to know what you were talking about with Alex. Nigel hummed, smile broad as he buried his face in Will's neck to ghost kisses over his skin.
No, you don't.
It didn't last. The profiler pushing the broader man back with a twist of lips and his own mockery of a smile. I need to know what you do for a living. I need the truth on you, or this, whatever this is over. He let Will push him away, the hands on his chest keeping a foot of space between them that he wasn't feeling partial to.
I don't discuss business, darling. Confidentiality. You know how it is.
That's what Hannibal told me, too. Not good enough. He shrugged. I need to know, or I need to cut ties.
You asked Hanny about me. What did Big Brother have to say?
He let Will go, let his hands slide along the curve of waist and hip that he wanted to feel canting against him, and stepped deeper into the kitchen. There was a pot of coffee on. Will hadn't seen a coffee machine on the counter before. Either the man had dug it out from under the counter someplace, or he'd picked one up to keep Will in caffeine. Will really needed to find out exactly how much the pair of brothers had discussed about him and his preferences. He said your business was immoral and that I should stay away from you. Will accepted a cup of coffee, smelling of that same delicious roast he'd been enjoying from every cafe he'd visited thus far. He didn't doubt he'd be ruined for his usual swill when he got back home.
Is that all Hanny had to say about me?
Nigel laughed, and it was a low, deep rumble that made another rush of something foolish swim in his stomach. He felt like he was dealing with a teen crush. The man was a bad influence.
A better description than I'd been expecting.
Nigel sipped his own dark brew, licking his lips to catch the lingering taste of caffeine. No cream or sugar in his ebony drink. Will took a sip of his own, sweet and dark, and everything that made his affair with coffee a real thing. What were you expecting?
I was expecting Miss Manners to tell you whatever it took to have you running from me.
Which apparently wasn't much. He probably thought he had a better grip on Will than he really did. That was certainly going to piss his brother off once he figured it out. Hannibal never did take well to being wrong. I'm starting to wonder if you two even like each other, Will took another sip of coffee and climbed onto a bar stool.
Oh?
Dark eyes met his own, a pale brow rising in question.
What makes you think that we don't?
Both of you are warning me against the other, and neither of you seem too close to the other. You've told me more about Hannibal, but I think that has more to do with my asking questions than any real desire to discuss your brother. Well, he's never even mentioned you before.
Like I said, family is private. He wouldn't discuss me, and I won't discuss him, generally. It's just the monsters that we are.
Monsters?
Oh, yes. Hanny and I get along great. But that's because we're one and the same. Two sides of the same coin. But two predators of that variety can't coexist, so I moved to Bucharest.
Nigel was watching him, reading Will the way that Will read thousands of others. The man was smarter than he looked, hiding a mind as keen as Hannibal's behind the disheveled appearance of a thug. You're not winning any point in your favor, Nigel. Hannibal has yet to do anything that I've seen that could be remotely described as monstrous. He's a therapist, not a murderer. Though you're starting to sound very much like the latter. He set his coffee to the side. Any chance you want to discuss that? He snorted a laugh and sipped his coffee. He wasn't deterred in the slightest.
If it'll reassure you, gorgeous, all right. What do you want to know?
It was too easy. He wasn't expecting easy. Tell me about your job. He started, earning a considering look from his host.
I'm a hand for hire, and a jack-of-all-trades.
Nigel answered, well, not. What sort of jobs? Will pushed.
Whatever the money is good for.
He shrugged, nonchalant. Neither of them was new to this game. Will wondered how many times Hannibal had bailed his younger brother out of jail. Do you kill people?
Do you really want to know the answer to that?
Nigel countered, pulling his Trovac from the back waist of his pants to set on the counter beside him.
The people who die in my line of business know what's coming. They're not good people. Not the kind of people you're trying to protect.
It went against everything Will believed in, to sit there and drink coffee with a man he knew was a killer. You kill people, and I'm a profiler who works to catch killers. He laughed, looking at the weapon of death on the counter across from him. Will's stomach was twisting, heavy knots making the profiler nauseous as he sat there, sipping his coffee with faux calm. There was a chance he wouldn't be leaving again if this was the way their conversation was going.
You are, but you're not about to rat me out, and I'm not about to off you.
Why not? He didn't pull away from Nigel as he walked around the island, standing behind Will to give homage to his neck, pressing lips to one of the dark-colored kisses he'd bitten into Will's throat.
Because not a lot of people pay attention to you, and it feels good to be wanted.
Nigel nipped the bruise, earning a sharp intake of breath from the man he adored. That doesn't make you safe. Will argued, drinking his coffee and wishing it were something stronger.
Doesn't it?
Nigel kissed his way up Will's neck, catching the lobe of his ear between teeth to tug, the rasp of overnight growth scratching Will's throat. It made his cock jump.
I don't think you'll do it, gorgeous. You have too much riding on this to be turning in a man. You have no proof of killing anyone.
His hand snaked along the side of his thigh.
You tell them I'm a killer with no evidence to hold up in court, and I'll walk away a free man. But you'll be out of the opportunity of two friends and a very probable lover.
Will leaned into the man at his back. Let the touch of fingers drift beneath the hem of his borrowed shirt to trace the flesh of stomach hidden beneath, and feel the muscles jump. What else do you do?
I'm not telling.
Nigel kissed him again, hand finding the growing mound in Will's pants that was piquing his interest. Don't trust me? Will leaned his head back against a broad shoulder, and let the exploring lips search out his skin to map with teeth he'd forbidden only two nights before. He didn't care. Nigel was right. It felt good to be wanted.
Not yet.
He sucked another mark into the beautiful canvas of Will's flesh, and led him away from the counter towards the bathroom.
Trust is earned, darling. You came into my home to threaten me. Not a very good way to earn trust.
Nigel took the tails of his shirt and pulled it overhead, broad hands falling to the Ciderman's shirt to pull it free, and reveal planes of creamy white skin waiting to be ruined like fresh fallen snow. So, there's no evidence of killing, but I could find evidence of the rest. Like illegal sex in the back room of the strip club. He didn't doubt that there would be drugs mixed into that picture somewhere as well. Yet he still lifted his arms, for Gunn caused hands to pull his shirt overhead, and let his fingers fall on button and fly to free himself of the denim becoming too tight. Will hissed a breath when one of those hands found their way to his boxers and under elastic.
Some people deserve to die, Will. Is that so hard to believe?
It wasn't. He'd seen enough blood and murder in the world to know that some monsters needed to be put down. But that wasn't the way the world worked, not in most places. Not where he was from, where a pedophile could get off with only 5 years in prison for molestation and confirmed possibility of reoffending. Some people needed to die. He didn't disagree with that. But that didn't mean that those were the kinds of people that Nigel was killing.
Tell me more about your victims. He reached behind him, combing fingers through bed tousled ashen hair, as he stepped out of his clothes and towed off his socks.
I don't discuss business, darling. Stop asking.
He groped the mound of Will's ass, letting the profiler go to step into the glass stall of his shower, as he opened his own jeans, dropping his pants to pull on the floor and kicked off his briefs to join. Pausing, he turned to the top bathroom drawer, a dresser he'd had installed years ago for keeping his Gappy's things neat and out of the way in the bathroom. It created more space for storage without compromising the spacious bathroom. He pulled open the top drawer and took his time carefully moving the towels. Lube in hand, he stepped into the glass stall and grinned as Will looped his arm around his powerful shoulders and leaned in to steal a kiss, feeling the press of hard muscle and a thick cock against him. What were you doing in the drawer?
You're nothing but questions.
Nigel reached past him, grabbing and turning the knob, to rain beautifully heated water upon them.
I thought this might work better with a little lube.
He held up a bottle of lubricant for Will to see.
Unless you have a certain masochistic streak I don't know about.
Not for that, Will snorted, feeling the growing excitement mixed with arousal he'd enjoyed their first night. And wondered exactly how much the alcohol had been to blame in the first place. And I came here to get clean, not start a fight and get dirtier.
I promise you'll be plenty clean by the time I'm done.
A finger creased to the knuckle pressed between the mound of Will's ass, to push against his opening. Slipping into his passage to have Will's toes curling, breath stolen with a sudden intrusion as he felt the digit move, push him open and find that bundle of nerves that made him want to scream with uncanny ease.
I still need answers, Nigel.
He panted against hard skin, another finger joining the first and his head rocked back, the column of his neck left for the taking by the Batman, who moved in to trail kisses from collar to jaw, scissoring his fingers to open the man in his arms as he indulged.
I don't discuss business well.
He bit hard enough to make him jerk, and pushed in a third, catching the leg that moved over his hip with a stretching pressure building inside. He felt full, so full, but not nearly as full as he was going to be, not when Nigel was through. Will shuddered as stretched digits found that little bundle of nerves that made him twist and bend in pleasure, gripping the bad man tighter as fingers ran against that place.
Answers!
He demanded again, finding himself suddenly empty as Nigel pulled free, slicking his swollen cock with the extra. He swallowed, grip tightening as his other leg was hoisted to encompass Nigel's waist, and the bad man balanced them against the sliding glass.
No.
He kissed him again, hard and bruising as his cock found Will's hole and thrust inside, filling him to the core. His breath hitched, moans swallowed by the moth that was claiming his and kisses, devouring the sound of his pleasure.
Damn it, Nigel!
He arched into him, reaching between them to take his own flesh in hand and pump it to the rhythm of the cock thrusting inside. It felt good, better than it had any right to, and he hated himself for loving it so much with the killer.
Stay.
Nigel panted his demand, stilling, buried inside, to drag a needy noise from Will when the pleasure suddenly stopped.
Stay with me for a week.
He pushed wet curls back from the profiler's stormy eyes, forcing their gaze to meet his own as he had commanded of them before.
Stay with me for 1 week, and I'll tell you what I do.
He squirmed, feeling the pressure of Nigel's swollen head pressing into his prostate, as he sat mounted on the powerful man who held him righted. One week? He let his head fall against the glass, lolling to the side for the mouth that followed his throat. He could feel the cool of the shower door that he was balanced against seep into his cheek. And it was doing nothing to aid his thinking, now that Nigel was hard against him and deep within him, the fire of his mouth sucking marks of owning against his throat.
1 week. You stay with me for 1 week, and I'll show you what I do.
He nosed his face back to meet his own, and captured lips in a kiss. Gentle and soothing, and nothing like the marks that littered his neck.
This thing between us, I have to be honest with you. It's driving me a little crazy.
You're dangerous, possessive, and obsessive.
And you're enjoying every minute of it, darling. Don't tell me you're not. This is a devotion you've never been privy to before. It's consuming and chaotic and entirely for you.
Nigel kissed him again.
I don't cheat. I abhor it.
But you'll steal.
I'll always steal.
He grinned like a bastard, and thrust to drive a moan from the balancing man who clung to him in reward.
Will you stay, darling?
Yes, he gasped. I'll stay. The sudden kiss that pressed against him was consuming. Nigel's excitement a physical thing as he crushed Will to him. A gentle rocking beginning between them as he held him close, fucking as one. Will forced his eyes to meet Nigel's, giving the bad man what he wanted, drowning in pleasure as he was rewarded with the raw desire he found burning within them for him, and him alone. It was overwhelming, the want he could see there. It was beyond sexual desire, it was utter devotion. An all-consuming love directed toward him by this man, who had only ever known him in stories. Will had never seen such devotion directed at him before, never felt the desire for one human being to another where he himself was involved. It was giving him a high that he never wanted to come down from. He ground down against the cock filling him, twisting to meet the thrusting rocks that pushed into him from below. It was too much, and not enough all at once. His thumb flicked over the weeping head of his cock, as he felt another push of Nigel's flesh deep within, and he was done, pushed over his edge to spill heated seed between them. Hot spurts sucking Nigel's chest to be washed down their bodies by the rain of water that pounded against Nigel's back. Will wasn't in love, not with Nigel. But he didn't have to be for this. A relationship might have been too much to try and balance with the killer from Bucharest, but a friend with benefits? One who knew what to do with him and leave him lightheaded and reeling? He'd give it a try. Nigel's thrusts were flagging, the man's pace faltering as his own peak came so close. He held Will's hips tight enough to bruise, buried himself and groaned as he emptied his heat deep inside the profiler.
You're not just agreeing for the sex, are you, darling?
He asked with a grin. Will smiled, giving his friend with benefits lazy kisses as he relaxed into him, let him slip free from his body and help ease Will to his feet. No, it was for the working shower and free coffee. The comment earned him a biting kiss, one that had his smile growing wider, and an ache in his chest wishing that it was something that could last.
I'll get you a towel. Make you some breakfast while you finish washing.
Nigel offered one more kiss before letting him go, releasing Will only once he was sure the profiler wasn't about to fall over and could stand on his own. Leaving his darling to the rain of hot water, he stepped out of the shower, closing the door carefully behind his oblivious lover to return to the towel drawer he had left ajar. The grin that split his face was nothing kind, as he picked up the phone that he had left peeking just over the towels, and smiled into the Skype feed before hanging up, pulling a towel from the drawer to leave it folded on the toilet. Nigel slipped on his jeans, pocketing his phone, before leaving to handle breakfast for the man rinsing his cum from his body. He felt like a god as he stepped out of the bathroom, sending a quick text to his brother as he stepped into his kitchen, barefoot and dripping. Hannibal stood in the kitchen of his home, leaning back against his marble counter, a glass of rich and heady Zinfandel in hand that he scented and sipped, watching with the stillness of a cobra as the man he was chasing gasped and moaned over his brother's shoulder, his back pressed against the steaming glass of the shower stall, the man screaming his orgasm as he shuddered his end in Nigel's arms, his brother buried as he emptied himself within, his seed spilling to Paintwill's core, his will. Hannibal leaned back, his lips pursed as he watched his brother leave the stall open to approach the phone balanced against towels. Nigel grinned at him, with that ever-familiar smile, the one he used when he thought he was about to get away with murder, ending the call with that ever-familiar, ever-irritating grin. Hannibal touched the thick brown paper of the package sitting on the counter beside him, ready for airmail, as he watched the betrayal end before him, and the screen light up with his brother's incoming text.
He's mine.
Is he? Hannibal smiled, dropping his phone on the counter as he turned back to the box, tearing the paper free to empty it onto the counter, Will's wallet sliding out over the marble top. He stepped through the dining room and into his sitting room, settling into a chair as he picked up his iPad.
I think you're wrong.
His smile broadened as he typed in a URL and watched the system load. Chapter 11. Ripper's Wrath. Welcome to Hart's funeral home. Hannibal greeted his captives in flawless Romanian as the Bentley's trunk swung open, filling the space with harsh artificial light. The men squinted into the illumination, eyes burning after so long trapped in the dark. They stared up at their captor, squinting to see him as their eyes adjusted to the new light, seeing little more than his silhouette against the brightness. Powerless before the Ripper, they squirmed in their bindings, shouting beneath their gags. Hannibal paid no mind to the notable curses he could hear in their throats behind the thick tape. Or what will be Hart's funeral home, he corrected. They didn't seem to care for the information provided of their current whereabouts. Voices growing louder and struggle harsher as their sights fully adjusted to reveal the man in the plastic suit standing above them. It was a futile battle, one neither man would win against the fishing line that held them, and one Hannibal would end all too quickly if either were to break the thick wand binding. He stepped out of sight, leaving the pair to adjust to their new surroundings as he sought their next form of transportation. This establishment is still under construction. It won't be open for a few more weeks, he explained to the unwilling tourists, locating a buyer. Paint and furnishings, I do believe, he explained, first moving one and then the other onto the buyer, moving the pair as though they were no more than struggling children and not full-grown men attempting to fight back. Closing the trunk, he began toward a pair of double doors, long, steady strides carrying the men ever closer to their ending moment. Hannibal could smell their fear, the scent of it sour with sweat and growing anxiety as he pushed them through the large swinging doors and into the processing room. Rolling a steel table weighed with bodies, sampling the overpowering scent of industrial bleach and embalming fluid, Hannibal was piqued with nostalgia. Memories of his younger years as an intern at Johns Hopkins drifting to the forefront of his memory palace. It was a time before his becoming, when the darkness prowling beneath his skin was still but smoke and steel, waiting to take form into something defined with teeth and claws. Releasing his hold on the pair, he stepped away from the beer, leaving them to their own devices as Hannibal searched for his next piece of necessary equipment. A touch of amusement curved his mouth when the younger man threw himself from the beer, landing with a sound of discomfort on the laminate floor. He hissed with a pain that he would soon remember as a kiss compared to the nightmare he was about to live. Locating a chair, he set the furnishings in the center of the room before gathering the fallen young man from the floor to force into a seat. He resisted, forcing his body rigid against the Ripper's strength, and was forced to succumb with the harshly driven pain from pressure points, body quickly restrained with a few additional rounds of tape.
If you would wait a moment, I will be right with you,
he assured the boy with a flash of crooked teeth and a smile. With the younger man settled, Hannibal turned his attention back to the older. His movements were slower than his partner's, pain and blood loss leaving him weak in his struggles.
You and I are going to have a conversation, Hannibal explained.
shifting once more from the bar to the second stretcher, one made with the curve of a crescent moon to its bend. "I found you in a place you did not belong," he said in pleasant reprimand, stepping away to turn the valve of a large cylindrical machine, its circular door swinging open on quiet hinges.
"I would like to know why," Hannibal informed the man of his demand, turning back to him.
Another deep-throated growl, sounding far too close to a curse for the man's continued health, sounded from beneath the silver tape of his gag. Hannibal regarded him with darkening maroon eyes, a warning the Romanian could not know how lucky he was to receive. It was one many before him had not been privy to, and one he would only receive once. Patting the man down, Hannibal found his wallet, an aged leather piece bought too long ago to make out the brand printed on its hide. It was a piece in desperate need of replacing, something he would have expected to find on his dear William's person.
"Mr.—"
He paused, brows raising as he looked at the driver's license that did not belong to the man on the bend. A pair of quiet, stormy blue eyes staring back at him from an apathetic face framed with chocolate curls. His sweet William looking back at him from the insert in the worn leather.
"How did you come by this?"
Another pat-down provided him with the man's own wallet, his Romanian driver's license tucked away safe inside a much newer piece of soft tan lambskin.
"You shouldn't have this, Mr. Ungar,"
he told the swine who should have been quaking. The Ripper's words flat, his tone level. It was a dangerous line he'd crossed.
"This doesn't belong to you."
It had been one thing to find the men rummaging through his profiler's house. It was another to know that said profiler may be abducted. Or worse. Hannibal didn't like other people touching his things, not without his permission.
"I would like you to tell me where you got this."
He stood above Ungar, watching his face contort with pain and anger as he wailed what Hannibal could only imagine to be pleading, as that was the intelligent course of action when bound and gagged before a serial killer in a morgue. Nimble fingers gripped the corner of the tape wrapped around the old man's ear, and tore the painful strip of adhesive from skin. It earned a cry that would have had a small twist coming to the sadist's lips if not for the possible disposition of his profiler.
"You sick cunt!"
Ungar wailed, arching off the table. The man was shaking, jerking in his bindings with renewed strength as he fought the losing battle against the fishing line to be free. Hannibal didn't doubt the crass man would have spat on him a second time had he the saliva to do so.
"Please answer the question."
"Eat my cock!"
The man was either very loyal or very simple. Hannibal had neither the time nor patience for either. Gripping the steel table by its side, he rolled it toward the machine.
"I do not tolerate rudeness or fools, Mr. Ungar, and you are most certainly both."
The man's face paled as the foot of the trolley bumped against the machine, his sense of self-preservation awakening as realization finally found him. There would be no torture or questioning. He had been given his one chance, and he had been found useless.
"Wait!"
The Ripper gripped him by his belt and shirt, sliding him over the smooth metal with ease into the darkened tube, pushing him inch by inch deeper into the enclosed space by his shoulders, until Hannibal's arms were partway down the tube, and the man's shoes bumped against the tunnel's base.
"I'm sorry!"
he screamed what should have been the first words out of his mouth, emotionless maroon eyes watching him through the opening of the door.
"I'm sorry, please, I'll tell you anything!"
The twist of a cruel smile curled thin lips.
"This is an alkaline hydrolysis processor,"
Hannibal explained, watching as tremors shook through the man, terror-filled eyes watching him like a malevolent god.
"More commonly known as a biocremator."
He gripped the heavy metal door, easing it to shut to seal in the screaming swine within, pausing in its close to allow the barest crack of light to filter through the darkness, illuminating the man's withering face for Hannibal to see his fear and desperation. Smell his terror like a musk. He presented the last words that Soren Ungar would ever hear.
"You're about to have your body broken down to its chemical foundation."
They were words the men may have preferred not to know.
"It will be reduced to fertilizer in a solvent of lye and water in a high-pressure container for the next 3.5 hours, at a heat of 320 degrees, though you will most likely drown long before it reaches that heat.
He slid the door closed and twisted the valve. Only the barest murmurs could be heard, the quiet banging of feet against the thick metal casing quieting his screams to a whisper, the soft sound of his pleas becoming lost in the quiet hum of the machine as it began to fill. And the Ripper turned his gaze to the man in the chair.
The alkaline hydrolysis processor is occupied, but the cremation furnace is still available. I would be more than happy to show you how it works.
He noted a dark spot on the front of the boy's trousers, and ignored the sharp, unpleasant scent that tainted the air. Closing the short distance between them, Hannibal crouched before the boy, suddenly looking very much his own age. The bravado that had brought him to that moment disappearing in wide, fearful eyes. Hannibal gripped the tape, silencing him by its edge.
"Or we can have a conversation. Which would you prefer?"
He tore the tape free. Chapter 10. Uninvited Guests. It came with no small sense of relief when Will at last found a cafe offering free Wi-Fi. Probably the first thing to go right since his argument with Jack regarding his being shipped off to Bucharest. He wasn't even frustrated as he fought his way through guessing which button on the Romanian site was accept and connect. Though his travel continued to be a trial, impatience and determination, with the help of his newly downloaded language apps and a map of the city, he was able to, more or less, direct a local cab driver, ignorant of the English language save for a few choice words, to each of the remaining locations of death, and to locate back-alley fire escapes and climb onto roofs. "He doesn't care for the theatrics," Will told himself as he stared out over the city from one such rooftop. It was his fourth building since leaving Alex for the day, and Will finally felt like a few of the pieces were falling into place. This killer wasn't like the Ripper at all. No sense of art to the brutality they offered to the city. This was a job, while the Ripper was a sculptor. He was sure the Ripper would have seen it as a waste, an opportunity for beauty squandered. "They have people working for them," Will said from where he stood over the drop site of where the body had hung. This one hadn't been shot. The man found hanging over the edge had walked off to die with a sudden snap of vertebrae. His death had been the most recent, only a week prior to Will's arrival. As he stood on the roof to stare out over the street, Will knew the deaths were being delivered by someone who didn't care. This wasn't their battle, not really. It was an order. They were being paid to finish the job. Whoever was completing the follow-through, they were seeing to it that each of the victims selected were walking themselves over the edge. All but one, Will reminded himself. All but the woman who'd fought back. Other than the consistency in death and hanging, that seemed to be where the similarities stopped. The employee was putting in only enough effort to see the job done in the location directed by their boss. They didn't actually care which way the bodies were facing when they fell, or if they were standing at the right point of the building when they leapt over, only that they jumped on the right building face. The one behind this was trying to send a message with the location of each kill. The location was important, as was using the correct side of the building. Whoever was planning these wanted the bodies all facing one direction, or, more likely, one point. If the project were being followed through by the one planning it, there would have been more of an effort to see that each body was facing the target they meant to intimidate. Instead, the one leaving the match to hang was abandoning the bodies facing the general direction. It was the telling that let Will know that there was more than one hand at work. That and the electric company Alex would need to contact in the morning. Feeling as though he was finally making some real headway, Will climbed down from the last building. He groaned as muscles pulled to ache and reminded him of the evening before, and a man who had yet to leave his mind. He produced a small bottle of aspirin from his pocket. Will dry swallowed two pills and stepped out from behind the building he'd just been scaling and back onto the street. It was late. The roads darkened with the approaching of midnight and crawling of shadows cast by city streetlights. The sky had gone completely black. Moon and stars snuffed behind the heavy overcast clouds threatening rain. Will didn't have much time to ponder the approaching weather, a splatter of cool wet drops scattering over his nose and cheeks as he stared up at the sky. "Of course," he laughed to himself. crossing the street back to the cab he'd left waiting. He'd count himself lucky for the rain holding off until he'd made it to the last building. The driver was an older man, his years hitting close to 60, and his English broken and partial at best, but it had been enough for the two of them to fight through a basic conversation between his memory and Will's apps. Will's second called for pickup of that day, and the one with the best sense of English he'd met thus far. They'd come to an agreement between them for the driver to stick around and cater to Will's travel needs for a few extra days. The ability to convey his needs with relative ease had been a much-needed reprieve after his hell of a day. Flipping open a notepad that Will had picked up when buying his kettle and the instant coffee necessary to get him through the trip with the money he'd grabbed from a suitcase after walking home from the precinct, Will pointed to his temporary address scrawled on the first page of the notepad. The easiest directions he'd given all night. He found himself home within minutes. The driver was more than happy to take his pay, with a handsome tip, and the request for a receipt, a gift for Jack or Marar to worry about later, and gave Will a friendly nod before disappearing down the street. It was possibly the happiest Will had been to see his temporary home, fishing his keys from his pocket to enter the warmth of the building and escape the wet night's chill. Feeling that he'd covered more than a little ground, considering his handicaps for the day, Will was fine with dropping the files that he'd spent the day toting about onto the living room table and calling it quits for the night. He'd make a point of taking Alex with him the following day to revisit the locations again and see if he could pick up anything noteworthy in the daylight that he'd missed in the dark. He doubted there'd be anything he wouldn't find in the pictures and reports, but it was always worth a second look. Turning on the lights, Will counted himself lucky again, as he looked out the windows to see that the sky had opened up to pour. Slipping off his shoes to kick into the corner, neglected but out of the way, he looked out into the night. The rain was bouncing off the street, seemingly at eye level thanks to his ground floor window, the drops hitting the ground to spring back into the night another half a foot, before reaching their final resting place on the street. It was pretty, in the way that all nature seemed to be when mixed with the city. The little balls of water catching car lights and street lights as they danced into the dark, to look like diamonds bouncing on the street. He wondered if it was raining at home in Wolf Trap. Slipping his phone from his pocket, Will punched the speed dial for Hannibal, and fell back onto the lumpy living room sofa. There was a broken spring in the bottom that had his ass sinking a little too far onto the left side of the cushion. It wasn't the best seat in the house, but it wasn't bad enough to have the profiler sliding over to the better side either. As per usual, Hannibal answered on the second ring.
William, I had hoped to hear from you sooner. How is your investigation proceeding?
Will closed his eyes and tried to picture the sitting room of Hannibal's house. A fire blooming at their side, heating his toes to stretch and curl by the flames. A glass of wine at hand to sip as they discussed the topics of the day. Will missed it, more than he thought he would.
It's going, he answered plainly. I think this trip might be cursed. I never should have accepted.
He tried to imagine which of Hannibal's crystal glasses he would have in hand. A plain bowl with a long elegant stem to hold between his fingers filled with Pinot Noir. Or one of the design frosted wafer thin goblets with fog etched leaves crawling up their sides, from a twisted stem meant to look like a branch.
It seems like anything that could possibly go wrong on this trip has.
Will's fingers flexed to feel the glass of stemware, and he was suddenly brought back to his lumpy couch and empty hand when his fingers passed through the nothing that he held. He heard the quietly breathed hum of Hannibal's appreciation for good liquor, a sound he'd learned days into their relationship, and he felt a smile pull at the corners of his lips. There truly was something about Hannibal that calmed the waters of his mind. Like nicotine to a smoker, he always seemed to take the edge off. Maybe it was the sense of calm that Hannibal always seemed to carry around him, as though he lived without fear.
Would it be intrusive of me to ask what has befallen you during your travels?
You already know part of it. I went 38 hours without sleep, thanks to insomnia and an air flight. Was immediately brought into the office upon arrival and passed out with you on the phone.
At the reminder of his last call's end, Will pried his eyes open and wandered into the kitchenette to fill the kettle he'd found with fresh water, and abandon it on the stovetop to boil. He stopped, turning his attention to another bag on the counter, and turned the kettle off, in favor of the bottle of Palinka he'd purchased earlier at the recommendation of the store clerk, while he'd been out shopping for the essentials on the little money he still had left. He had bought it, counting it as part of his tourism portion of the trip. Something Hannibal might approve of, with it being a local brew. Had been told to drink it warm, and he'd left it on the counter. Apart from being overly tired, which you should recover from sooner than the others with the melatonin I left in your bag. Your day doesn't sound like the disaster you're making it out to be. Is it safe to assume that there's more to this story? Definitely drinking wine. Will could hear the pop of wood in the fireplace. Hannibal loved his fire and wine. Once I woke, I thought I'd go hunting for some of that stuff that I mentioned missing from the apartment.
You did mention having no nothing in the unit before falling asleep.
Will grinned, pouring three fingers of the strange burgundy liquor into a mug. It wasn't my most articulate moment, he admitted, tasting the heady liquor. It had an alcohol content of 52, and promised pain in the morning if he didn't remember to switch between the spirit and water over the course of the night. I went out, tried to keep track of my landmarks to find my way back on foot, witnessed a murder, was seen, ran, and got lost. Silence passed on the other side of the line, and Will could almost see tightening of skin along the doctor's jaw, and the gentle spin of glass in hand to have crimson liquor clinging to the crystal walls as he considered the information offered.
I am only mildly reassured that this isn't a ransom call,
was his decided-upon answer, a touch of humor mixed with annoyance at the thought of Will having endangered himself.
Did you call the authorities?
I didn't have the number, Will admitted, and I was a little distracted. He took another sip of the rich liquid sliding in the bottom of his mug and licked his lips. It was good. He'd have to consider picking up another bottle before he left to bring it back to Hannibal. I ran into a bar and found your twin. You never mentioned having a brother before.
You've met Nigel.
His tone was flat, void of any emotion for Walter Reed through the voice on the phone. The face he had been envisioning in his mind clouding as he, for the first time, lost the image of Hannibal, to a reaction that he had neither experienced nor expected.
I don't suppose he left a good impression on you.
He left a lasting impression on me. Will drained the mug and switched to water. He didn't need another morning like the one he'd had. Trying to think with a pounding and sleep-deprived brain should never have been an option for him. Is he part of the Mafia or something? A hum was his immediate answer, neither amused nor simply considering.
He doesn't discuss his business with me, I'm afraid. All I can tell you is that what he does is immoral. And you're better off steering clear of my brother.
He'd been hoping for more, but he could tell the conversation was over. He wasn't going to push for anything his friend didn't want to give. Is that why you've never mentioned him before? Because of his chosen employment?
No.
Hannibal didn't sound annoyed, not entirely.
We simply don't talk about family. Family is private.
Sure enough, Will couldn't think of any lasting conversation pertaining to family, outside of a short session during the beginning of their scheduled conversations, where they'd spoken on the topic. A quick discussion of his mother and father, once, and in turn Hannibal's own, where Will had chosen to be difficult, and that had been it. No other mention of family to be had.
Was he the one to get you out of the bar?
Yeah, took me out the back door and brought me to his place. Gave me a place to stay for the night since I didn't know my way back on my own. Drove me to work in the morning. Will didn't share the details of what they'd done together after he arrived. It was a conversation he very much wanted to skip. Regret eating at him and making him itch for more of the strong spirit abandoned on the counter. He drank his water instead.
It sounds like you had quite the troubling night. Why didn't you call the police after your escape with Nigel?
Between the death driving, alcohol, jet lag, and meeting your previously unmentioned identical twin, I forgot. I hadn't slept more than 5 hours in nearly 48 at that point. I wasn't remembering a whole lot of anything that wasn't set directly in front of me. Will dropped the mug in his sink and left the kitchen before he could do anything stupid, like pick the bottle up and take it with him. He wasn't dependent. Not if you could still step away from the bottle.
Not your proudest moment, then.
Hannibal still didn't sound quite like himself. closer to wanting to ask a question that he wasn't willing to ask. Will hoped he didn't bother to ask. No, it wasn't, he admitted, turning on the lights in his bedroom to look at the half-dozen files laid out on his still-bare mattress, the ones he hadn't brought with him to the sites. Photos and documents, with English scribbled sticky notes stuck to their front pages laid out, and another notepad riddled with sloppy, rushed scrawl laid open. During the chase, the guys after me managed to get a hold of my jacket. I slipped out of it before they could get a better grip on me, but they got my wallet. He could almost hear the smile now. Loud amusement that the profiler simply couldn't catch a break.
Would you like me to mail something to you?
Hannibal offered, the clarity of his image in Will's mind coming through again as he once again knew the man speaking to him through the phone. Would you mind? Will was closing his eyes again, even as he shuffled the papers and folders back together to drop onto the small desk at his bedside, much as he had the first night. A sense of calm taking him with the smooth accented rumble of Hannibal's voice.
Not at all.
It was just past 7 in the evening when Hannibal pulled up the long gravel driveway to Will's farmhouse in Wolf Trap, Virginia. The drive had been long, but the knowledge of the profiler's gratitude for his assistance, and an acceptable excuse to rifle through the agent's dresser drawers and closet, was plenty incentive for the killer to enjoy the long car drive out to the middle of nowhere. It was a familiar road, with familiar surroundings, and an unfamiliar end. Something sitting at the end of his profiler's driveway that shouldn't have been. Something that didn't belong. Next to Will's aged Volvo was parked a dark blue sedan. A car Hannibal didn't recognize as any of the Quantico agents he'd been associating with as of late. Parking his Bentley farther back on the long stretch of the dirt road than what might have been socially acceptable for any routine visit, Hannibal shrugged out of his long, elegant dress coat and laid it carefully to the side as he opened the glove compartment and slipped a number of discreet, slender blades up his sleeve.
You don't have any family,
Hannibal muttered to himself, climbing out of the car to walk a wide loop around the house through the tall grass of the field to the back kitchen door.
No one who would visit you, at any rate.
He crept through the darkness, silent as a snake as he took the doorknob in hand. It wasn't locked. The back door seemingly never secured to the home of the profiler who lived too far out with too little to steal for anyone to take interest in breaking into his home.
So who is in your home?
Hannibal pushed open the door, letting it swing on its hinges wide and slow into the darkened house, slipping off his shoes at the entry as he stepped over the threshold on silent sock feet. He could always say he'd arrived before the intruder, should there be anyone with just as much reason to be standing at his profiler's home as he did. Though Hannibal doubted the excuse would be needed. Will would have informed him if he'd been expecting any other guests within his home during Hannibal's visit. It was quiet, the kitchen empty of all guests save Hannibal. He could smell the unwelcome individuals from where he stood in the darkened kitchen, a pair of men stinking of airports and two-day-old clothes. The sharp clip of Romanian words accompanying the pair as they rifled through dresser drawers and turned over the contents of Will's methodically arranged desk had the killer taking pause, listening to their exasperated words of distaste at the profiler's absence. Hannibal touched a drawer, sliding it open to wrap his hand around the handle of an age-worn kitchen knife. His William did like to hold on to things that could be replaced, use them until they had been worn through and simply couldn't be used anymore. His knives were sharp, the handles telling of years of use while the blades told of a man who kept them as sharp as the day they'd been purchased. Hannibal had long since memorized the house, the placement of every table and lamp, which floorboards creaked when stepped upon, and which door led to where, without needing to look. A map he had created over numerous anonymous visits to the profiler's home during his absence. Moving like a shadow, he stepped around the corner leading from kitchen to living room. Two men, both armed with guns and stinking of Romania. He stood behind one, an older man with long copper hair streaked with silver, tied in a ponytail at the base of his neck. The other man was younger, short ebony hair slicked with far too much product. They both wore suits, though nothing as stylish as his. caught between the need to question the men standing in the house that they should not have been in, and the need for self-preservation against their firearms. As always, he would find a way to accomplish both. With a keen knowledge of the human body and an intimate love for taking them apart, Hannibal pounded the butt of the knife into the closer man's temple. He crumpled at once, knees giving out beneath him as he was rendered unconscious effortlessly.
Sorin?
The younger man turned, brow raised at the unexpected sound of his partner's falling. His eyes narrowed at once as he looked at the man standing over his partner's unconscious body, knife and keen maroon eyes trained on his own earthy brown.
"Where's William Graham?"
he demanded with a cool authority he didn't hold over the more experienced killer in his native tongue, moving the side of his suit jacket to reveal the 9mm holstered. He had yet to realize to what extent his disadvantage had climbed by keeping his weapon sheathed and threatening the Ripper.
"Why are you looking for Will?"
Hannibal offered his own demand in return, head cocked ever so slightly as he examined the boy, and took note of the lovely roasts his legs and thighs would make. He was lean, toned with just enough fat on his body to promise flavor, while not creating an overly fatty piece of meat. Hannibal would greatly enjoy this man, marinated in garlic and wine.
"I am the one asking the questions here,"
he scolded as though Hannibal weren't nearly twice his age, and pulled the gun from its holster to aim at the cannibal, in one slow fluid motion of a man whose ego was bigger than himself.
"It's rude to enter another man's home uninvited,"
he lectured in turn, dragging a scream from the younger man as the point of his borrowed kitchen knife sank into the flesh of his hand. He dropped the gun, eyes wide at the sudden violence against him. The moment of panic was more than enough for the Ripper, and he charged, slamming himself against the slighter boy to drive the breath from his lungs and crush him against the wall behind him, the strength of his forearm driving into the flesh of his throat. Hands moved to claw at the Ripper, the boy desperate for breath as he tried and failed to best a king among monsters. A knee to his gut drew a broken, gasping cry, and Hannibal let the boy fall to curl in on himself.
"I would like you to tell me what you're doing here."
He kicked away the fallen gun and tore the knife from the boy's hand. It wouldn't do to give him a weapon. He seemed to live by his arrogance and ego, best not to encourage stupid decisions.
"As well as why, please."
Choking for breath, the boy looked at the doctor and spat, a thick loogie of snot and spit, the disgusting mass sliding on the leg of his pants. It made the barest curl turn his lips as he looked at the revolting fluid running down his leg. The disgusting display was followed by a nasty Romanian curse involving himself, the man beneath him, and his mother's sex organs. Hannibal drove his heel into the oozing wound of the boy's hand and ground until he felt the crunch of bone beneath his foot and heard a howl of pain break into a sob. Hannibal decided to give the boy the benefit of the doubt, assumed their ignorance, and changed tongues. It had been a while since he'd last spoken Romanian, but it fell from his lips with a smooth clarity and only a slightly accented curl.
"What do you want with Will Graham, and why?"
He pressed his foot a little harder and pulled another scream from the young man who he would see into a roast.
"Fuck you!"
he hissed in return, teeth ground in anger and pain. Hannibal would show this boy the true meaning of the word before their evening reached its end.
"I abhor rudeness,"
he explained, slipping the tie from around his neck with a hiss of silk over cotton, and, crouching, forced the boy's arms behind his back and tied them tight. His body was resisting, still too pained to uncurl and fight back with enough enthusiasm to set himself free. A second slip of the knife through the boy's other palm had the killer threading the tie through his hands to hold them still, before wrapping the binding to slow the flow of blood at the wrist.
"Stay still. I don't need you losing any more blood than you have to."
Not yet. More or less disabled, he decided that the best course of action would be to get the pair out and away from Will's home before any more evidence that their being present could be stained into the atrocious carpet. As it was, he was going to need to bleach mop the floor, and tell the profiler that his dogs had destroyed the rug with their need for the outdoors before he could enter the home and bring them to a kennel.
"I was hoping to make a play this evening,"
he explained to the still-conscious man, locating Will's spool of fishing line. The thin plastic thread, though not his first choice for binding, was sturdy enough to see the pair through transportation. Their ultimate deaths would have to wait until they pried the necessary answers from death-pleading lips. It wasn't the entertainment he had been looking for that evening, but he supposed it would do.